Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
One question answered in the hiring of Mike McCarthy as Dallas Cowboys head coach. Another question answered with Tua declaring for the NFL draft and actually signing with an agent, so there is no going back. Alabama is losing its quarterback, though the talk was that even if he returned to Tuscaloosa for another season, he would not play all of next year. And as I was kind of filtering through the possibilities and thinking about the benefits of staying in school versus going to the NFL, when you're rehabbing for an injury and a team drafts you, obviously you have access to all of their facilities and team doctors and athletic trainers. So similar to the treatment that he would get at Alabama, especially if he wasn't planning on playing at all the rest of his college career, even if he stayed at Alabama, it made more sense to me as I thought about it and the timeline and when he might actually play again that he would declare for the NFL draft. It was interesting to hear him talk on Monday about who he consulted with and who he talked to. And I wasn't surprised at all to hear that family and pastors were tops on his list. But he also indicated that he spoke to people inside the NFL. Now, he didn't say exactly who those people were, whether he was getting the information secondhand, whether he was speaking to agents who were tapped into the NFL, however he did it. Maybe it was via coaches from Alabama who had connections, la, 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 la. A lot of what they asked him was certainly about his rehab and his recovery from the dislocated hip and the extensive surgery that he had done. He also had a broken bone. But he heard the question over and over from NFL people whether or not he would be ready to do a pro day. If that's even a consideration, then there's a real good chance that Tua could end up playing next season. If his plan wasn't to play at Alabama regardless, then it does make sense that he would declare for the NFL draft. It may take a while, but he can learn and he can study the playbook and he can watch and he can listen and he can be around teammates and coaches and he can start to get used to being a professional football player even before he's actually physically ready to get on the field. And that is a huge benefit to a rookie at any position, but specifically one as complicated as quarterback. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. We're live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studios. Millions of Americans finance the homes of their dreams with their help, and they can help you too. Rocket Mortgage, push button, get mortgage. Before I go on with Tua and let you hear from Coach Saban, a lot of you on both Twitter and Facebook have been asking me about the resolution of the Creature in the Attic story. So if you missed it last week, I went home after work one morning. I was in my office. I was actually brushing my teeth. I walk around when I brush my teeth. And I was in my office, and all of a sudden, I start hearing this scratching above my head. It's like there are either a bunch of different animals or one animal who's not only running around above my head on my ceiling, but is scratching at things. Oh, it freaked me out. It went on for like a half an hour. So I texted my brother because my brother had been with me for a few days and had slept in the office. And he said, oh yeah, I heard that. I just forgot to tell you. Oh, great, Matt. So here I am getting ready to put my Christmas decorations away. Kind of. I had to go up into the attic and get the, you know, the big plastic bin that I put them in. And now I'm freaked out. There's no way I'm opening up the door to the attic. So I have to follow up on that story because a lot of you have been asking me what happened. I do, in fact, have some deets to pass along, and I'll do that after our next break, so about 15 minutes from now. Oh, what a tease. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. Even before Tua announced his decision, his head coach stepped to the podium first. And it's not that you don't hear Nick Saban praise his players, because he does, but I always appreciate that we get to see the side of him, the relationships that he develops, and you really understand why young players are anxious to play for him, not just because of the winning, but that's a huge part of it, but because of who Nick Saban is.
Tua has probably had as much of an impact on our program here as any player that we've ever had. And I'm not just talking about as a football player. He's got great character. He's a great leader. He's done a wonderful job in the classroom. There's a spirit about him that has impacted myself and everybody around him in a very, very positive way.
I've had a difficult time making this decision about my future. But first and foremost, I want to thank my Lord and Savior Jesus Christ for this opportunity to stand before you all with my decision. My love for the University of Alabama, our coaches, our fans, and my teammates has made this especially hard for me. I have had the advice and counsel of my parents, my family, and coaches in going through a thorough analysis of the alternatives. And without further ado, with lots of prayers, thoughts, and guidance, I have decided that I will be declaring and entering the 2020 NFL Draft.
So he talks about how difficult the decision has been. Lots of counsel, lots of prayers, lots of going over the pros and cons. You know what it reminded me of? And I'm sure that many of us have done this in our own lives, whether it's for jobs, maybe it was a college decision, maybe it was a choice to move. Maybe you're even this analytical about who you marry. I don't know that I've ever done pros and cons about dating someone. But certainly about moving. I mean, I definitely overanalyze everything, but I think that might be even beyond me. But he reminded me a little bit of the story we heard about Gerrit Cole, going back to when he got drafted by the Yankees right out of high school, and this was his dream job even before he went to college. He loved the Yankees, and he and his dad, they sat down, and they made a list of pros and cons, and they were very analytical about the choice of either playing for the Yankees, joining their minor league system, however long it might take, and working his way up into the majors, or going to UCLA and deciding whether to go to college or skip college was a decision they approached like this. Lots and lots of conversations. And again, I can relate to this in my own life. I'm sure you can as well. There are certain people that I always consult before I make big decisions. Even if I'm relatively comfortable with my choice, even if it feels like a no-brainer, I always talk to my mom. I have a group of friends. I have a lot of friends, but I have a very short list of friends who know me and have known me long before I ever got into sports radio. So they know me. They know what's important to me, not just the sports radio side of me. So there's always a list of people I consult. And that certainly does include some pastors of mine that I met in Oklahoma, and I still consider them to be my personal pastors. And they kind of give me their perspective. I have an older friend who's in her 60s. She and I are very unlikely friends, but we're really close. And we talk on the phone about once a month. And so I like this about Tua, that this was a decision that he didn't just make on his own. It wasn't a gut thing. It wasn't instinct. No, he talked about it. He talked to a lot of people about it. That's smart. It's really smart. Because very often, when it's a decision like this that affects us so deeply and so personally, and we're so tied up in it, not to mention the emotions of being hurt and leaving a place where he had some incredible moments. But then the idea of the money, thinking about millions of dollars can change a person, let's be honest. And to have other people who keep you grounded, who anchor you, who can give you a perspective that isn't so emotional. Now, my mom is always on my side, but she'll also tell me things I don't want to hear. But it's good to have people that give us various perspectives. So I like the wisdom of Tua talking to a lot of different people.
Thank you, Mama.
It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio.
My 3 years at the University of Alabama have been the epitome of a roller coaster. I've had a fair share of ups, of many ups and a handful of downs. And I couldn't be happier to know that with all the success and failures I've had here at the university, it has prepared me for life in general.
That's true, whether it's Alabama or it's somewhere else. But if you consider the stages that he's played on, if you consider Heisman Trophy ceremony, where he was a runner-up, if you consider the pressure he's already felt and the scrutiny he's already been under, then you think about the nonstop conversation and microscope when Nick Saban had to decide between he and Jalen Hurts and how their relationship was overanalyzed again and again and again and again. I was really impressed, and I've talked about this before with Jalen. I was really impressed with how Jalen handled it because he was the older guy. He was the one who was in danger of losing his job. He was obviously the one who got benched in a big game. And yet he always talked about Tua as his brother. Tua did the same. He could have been arrogant about it. He could have been prideful. He wasn't. He was very respectful. Very appreciative of everything he learned from Jalen Hurts in that relationship. So when Coach Saban talks about his character, I think we've seen many opportunities and many examples of what Coach is talking about. Now, he did speak to, and probably his family and some of the coaches at Alabama spoke to various NFL peeps. And Tua was asked the question of, where do you think you will land in the NFL draft?
I don't think I can tell you that. I don't think any of the teams can tell you that. You know, it really depends on, you know, how the doctor's report goes, you know, with my MRI, my x-rays, at the 3-month mark. But then again, I think, you know, what factors into this decision too was, you know, our faith. And I mean, it's a leap of it.
Yeah, it is. This is definitely a leap of faith. Even if you think, oh, no problem, he's a sure thing, he'll go top three, it's still a leap of faith after a serious injury like this one. And he mentions that 3-month mark multiple times. So far, he's progressing really well. In fact, he did this press conference without crutches. But he continues to point to this 3-month evaluation that he'll go through, that's really the gauge. And that the doctors right now are reserving judgment. They can see that he's doing well, but they will recheck his hip surgery around that 3-month mark. And then he'll find out whether or not it's possible he could participate in a pro day, which blows me away. That's amazing. He has this injury, this devastating, brutal injury in November. Is that early November, mid-November? And his draft status gets thrown completely into flux. It's like one of those games in Vegas that they take off the board because they don't really know what to do with it. He's been rehabbing with his team since. And initially, Alabama's team doctor, team surgeon, said that Tua wouldn't be able to resume any athletic activity until about mid-February. So maybe 5-6 weeks from now. And that he wouldn't be ready to begin throwing until sometime in the spring. But maybe, depending on when the pro day is held, he might be able to engage in some activity. Honestly, I feel like he's given pro scouts and pro teams enough of a sample size that they don't need to see a whole lot more. However, they always like to run players through tests on their own. Now, he will obviously not be participating in the combine, and maybe he wouldn't have done anything at the combine anyway, except for interviews. But this is a different process than what it is for a guy with maybe a minor injury or a guy who's completely healthy starting this process. All right, you can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio. I appreciate your responses about the hiring of Mike McCarthy in Dallas. I'd love to hear from you and what you think. We did answer our trivia question, but I'll make sure I follow up on that. And also, you're finding us on Facebook, weighing in about Tua, weighing in about Mike McCarthy. Producer Chris has put up a spot on our Facebook page as well. If you haven't yet voted for Monday MVP in the wake of Wildcard Weekend, we'll reveal that. And, oh, the candidates for Touchdown Tuesday, they are a delicious bunch. 855-212-4227. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Tua remains at quarterback on a first and 10 from the 20-yard line. Snap to Tua, empty backfield. Looks wide open. Najee Harris out of the backfield. Touchdown, Alabama. 19 yards. They lost sight of Najee. The nearest defender was somewhere near Columbus.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
The great Eli Goals on the Alabama Football Radio Network. I'm happy for Tua. I'm disappointed that we won't see him again at Alabama, and it's a tough way to end. But let's be honest. He had some incredible moments, as he mentioned, the highest of highs while he was at Alabama, to go along with the injury and the pain of going through this dislocated hip and now having to face all this recovery. But what more could he have done other than running the table, which, you know, Clemson interrupted that. But as an individual football player, what more could he have done? It's difficult to think about him going out like that, but his future is bright in the NFL. Jamie finds me on Twitter, A-Law Radio. I think Tua made a good decision, sending prayers that he heals well. Well, certainly, as a young man who's in great physical shape, with all of the facilities and the support and the doctors and the athletic training staffs that he'll have both at Alabama as well as when he gets to the NFL. If anyone's going to heal, it's going to be Tua. It's one of the benefits. Yes, it is workman's comp issue when you get injured on the job in pro sports, but you also have the best of the best to help you get better and get back to your craft. 855-212-4227. That's our toll-free line brought to you by Geico with a quick way you can save money. Switch to Geico. Go to geico.com and in 15 minutes you could save 15% or more on your car insurance. So I'll get to my creature in the attic story here coming up, but we're asking you to vote the very end of our Monday MVP poll. So you can do that on Twitter and Facebook, and we'll do the big reveal coming up. We've also got some exit interviews with the likes of Josh Allen and Zach Ertz, looking ahead even now to divisional weekend. So there's a lot still on the NFL plate. Let's talk to Mike, who's in Philadelphia. Welcome to After Hours.
Hey, you know, I look at last year, 2018, the Eagles, they were ranked 30th in rushing that year. Their defense was bottom of the league, and their offense was mediocre. And if you remember in the Saints game in the playoffs, Nick Foles was 27 yards away, if not for a drop pass from Alshon Jeffries, 27 yards away of beating the Saints at home after the week before he beat the number one defense, Chicago Bears, in Chicago with a go-ahead game-winning touchdown drive. All this after taking over a team that went 5-6 with Carson Wentz. And I go back to this year, this Eagles team, during their healthiest part of the stretch of the year, which was the first half when they had Aguilar and Jeffries, they were 5-7 with Wentz. And I'm hearing about Wentz beating the worst two teams in football, Giants and Redskins, at the end of the year, even though Doug Peterson, the head coach of the Eagles, is 12-2 without Wentz with four playoff wins. And I see Carson Wentz, the first two, 9 minutes of this game versus the Seahawks, play terrible before he gets hurt. I see Josh McCown, a 40-year-old backup, have close to 100 passer rating. So it goes back to this point. The Eagles, at worst, would have went 13-3 with Nick Foles this year. They would have had another Super Bowl run. And Howie Roseman took a team that could have been a dynasty with Foles. Instead, they will never sniff a Super Bowl win with Carson Wentz.
Okay. So what should they do about it, Mike?
So what they do is they go and get Nick Foles back. He doesn't want to sit on the bench to Gardner Minshew. Gardner Minshew is going to be their starter.
Well, right now he's under contract, and we don't know whether or not he's going to be the starter. Actually, there's been some talk that because of the money they've invested in Nick Foles, they may give him another opportunity to be the starter. Either way, they've got an entire spring and summer and training camp to go through before we know that for sure. But right now he's under contract, so he can't walk away from that.
And that's why I think they can work out where they pay half the money and the Eagles pay half the money and they get Nick Foles back, because we know the backup quarterback, how important that is. We know how important.
And do what with Carson Wentz?
in general, a quarterback, how important he is.
And do what with Carson Wentz?
Listen, if you don't
No, you
make...
listen. Do what with Carson Wentz?
If Nick Foles is going to be the backup with the Jacksonville Jaguars, I don't... He doesn't
okay,
mind
so doing. You're not going to answer the question then?
So he'll be the backup Foles.
No, he's. I'm telling you, he's not going to do that. I appreciate that you're passionate about this. I know you called the show last night under a different name, by the way. So I get that you're really passionate about this, but the Eagles have made it very clear that Carson Wentz is their quarterback of the future, which is why they were willing to let Nick Foles go. So they do not agree with you, A. I don't agree with you either, Mike, in Philly. He is the reason that they made the playoffs. When they lost their top receiver, when they lost their top running back, he's a guy who set a record. He's the first 4,000-yard passer in franchise history, and none of his receivers had more than 500 yards. He's the glue that kept them together. So you may not like him as the franchise QB, but I promise you, the Philadelphia Eagles do, and they're the ones who get the say. Mike, thanks so much for your phone call. I appreciate it. Sneaky Sneakerton right there. Actually, that guy called the show yesterday, then sent me, if I'm not mistaken, a series of like 5 or 6 tweets with all the same stuff, only he was using the name Alan. Alan or Alex, so let's just beware. Same guy. Next time I'll just hang up on him, but I thought it was kind of funny that he disguised himself as someone different. The great lengths that people will go to when they need to be heard. It's After Hours on CBS Sports Radio. So a lot of you guys are weighing in on Facebook and Twitter, your reaction to the Mike McCarthy hire. I am going to get to that. I would love to take your calls on that. I'm not interested in talking about Carson Wentz and the Eagles anymore because they're done. But Mike McCarthy, Dallas Cowboys, big move here. I like it. We like it. What do you think? And also, the idea of these other coaching openings, how would you rank the other available candidates, at least the ones that are making the rounds? Josh McDaniels, Jim Schwartz even is going to interview with the Cleveland Browns. They're kind of doing the let's interview everybody that might be available. Greg Roman, Kevin Stefanski, Matt Rhule, though it sounds like the only real connection he has right now would be the Giants. Robert Saleh, Eric Bieniemy. A lot of these guys are still working. Wade Phillips, Jason Garrett. I forgot to put him on my list, but he's out there as well if anybody's interested. I mean, lots of guys need to fill out their offensive staffs, right?
In my opinion, Jason Garrett will be coaching in the NFL next year.
No, see, there you go. Even Jerry Jones giving him a great letter of recommendation on his way out the door. Okay, really quick before we take this break, because I teased it. Last week, freaked out by this scratching and clawing and footsteps running all over my head, running above my head in the attic. And so I got in touch with my property manager and she says, okay, we'll send a pest control guy. And so they send this guy named Don. Lots of personality. Don has lots of personality. And so Don, while I'm hiding in my bathroom, like behind a door in case something comes flying out the opening to the attic, Don gets up in the attic. And he looks around and he sees nothing except mouse footprints. I'm telling you, this was not a mouse. The footsteps were too heavy to be a mouse. But he says there are all kinds of mouse footprints. So he puts down some bait boxes. He puts down some traps. He drops a couple of F-bombs while he's in my attic. He tripped over something and almost fell out the hole in the ceiling. I don't know what he was doing up there. I was afraid to go up there. He said something about an exhaust fan. Actually had him hand me down my bins for the Christmas decorations so I didn't have to go upstairs. And then we shut the attic door. And then he walked around the rest of the house and he kind of looked to see where he could find potential other mouse traffic. Now, I've told you guys before the funny story about my cat bringing me mice. It hasn't happened in like 2 years, but we went through a stretch of maybe 3 winters where she was bringing me the mice. She would play with them. She would torture them. Then she would leave them for me. Thanks. Thanks, sugar. Awesome. Anyway, I feel like the mice kind of told all their friends and family because I hadn't seen them in quite a while. Now, every now and then I'd see a little bit of mouse poo. And so you knew that they were like, you know, underneath my sink or whatever. But I would put the trap out, not the trap, but the bait box, and I would clean up. Actually, you know what they don't like is mint. They really do not like mint. And so if you put mint where you think you might have mice, they do not like it at all. And so I hadn't had any issues, but I'm confident that these were not. Mice are silent. Little field mice, they're tiny. I'm not even afraid of them. I don't really want them in my house, but I'm not afraid of them. And so that's not what this was. Anyway, he puts down these bait boxes. He fills them. He puts down the traps. And he says, I'll come back on Monday. So he comes back on Monday afternoon. And he gets up in the attic again. And he's all excited, I can tell. Except he cannot find any evidence of mice. He was really upset. He's like, I don't know what's going on. Oh, did you hear it again? Did you hear the sound again? And I said, and this is the honest truth, I woke up at some point in the middle of the night, Friday into Saturday, and I felt like I heard something above my head, but I don't know. I might have been dreaming because I was kind of in a daze. You know, when you wake up and you're not really sure what's going on or what day it is. So I don't know for sure that I heard anything else, but I haven't heard it when I'm awake since then. And so he thought it was mice. He was all excited to go up into the traps on Monday and check the attic to see that there were mice caught there. Nothing. No evidence they'd been in the bait boxes. No, nothing in the trap. Nothing under my kitchen sink. Nothing in the garage. Nothing at all. He was really upset. He was like, crap. I don't know what's going on here. So in other words, the moral of the story is it's not a mouse. There's no mice, and I still have no idea what was crawling around in my attic. I also have no idea what was crawling around in my piano. You guys remember that last year? I opened my piano, and there was nothing in there. Finally got up the courage. So I think my house is haunted. That's pretty much all there is to it. So I'll be moving soon. I'm just going to find a new place to live, maybe move out to my car, me and the three pets.
Yeah!
So, yeah, I'm apparently sharing my home with something or someone.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
His heroics made us swoon this weekend.
I'm the best ever.
I am the greatest.
Now it's time to name the After Hours Monday MVP.
I need a hero. Give Henry at left guard. Second effort, Henry. Touchdown, Titans! And we've got a tie bowl game with the point pending.
That's the way we like it. We don't want nothing easy. We want it gritty. We want it dirty. And, that's the mentality we got to have. You know, my main focus is finishing, you know, each and every drive on all three phases. You know, don't give up on each other. You know, believe, you know, communicate, you know, are we out there, what we seeing, so we make adjustments as a team.
It was a happy birthday for Derrick Henry. Now 26 years old, the NFL's rushing king this season, and 182 yards on his birthday, no less. Against the New England Patriots. It's one thing to know he's going to be the focal point of the offense. It's entirely different to be able to limit and contain him. And I got to think, if you are a defensive back, but let's just say he gets second level of the defense. You're a defensive back, and you see that guy coming at you with a full head of steam. I mean, there are a lot of guys who probably wouldn't want to take on Derrick Henry. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Thanks so much for your votes for Monday MVP. We definitely took into account all of the votes on Facebook, and then we had our poll on Twitter. You can always find our polls After Hours CBS, and pretty soon we will reveal our Touchdown Tuesday choices. This is going to be fun, of course, because we've got four games. It fits so perfectly. And while there are multiple touchdowns per game, it's kind of fun to bring back some of the best moments of Wild Card Weekend. It's After Hours on CBS Sports Radio, 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4227. Before I get to some of your responses about Mike McCarthy in Dallas, and also some Tua tweets in there as well, hashtag Tua tweets. Tua does actually tweet. This weekend's wild card playoff games were a ratings bonanza for the four different networks who carried them. In fact, so this is all four networks averaged together, just so you can get kind of the big picture, and then I'll break it down for you. Nerd alert! About to be a very nerdy nerd alert. The viewership for Saturday and Sunday's doubleheaders averaged 30.5 million people. So across the board, four games, 30.5 was the average. That's up 7% from the average for 2019 wildcard games, which of course were after the 2018 season. So we're talking about a 7% same thing. 7% jump from a year ago on wildcard weekend. And it's the most watched wildcard round, speaking of average viewers, since 2016. Now imagine what the ratings are going to be like for divisional weekend. I know the defending champs aren't there anymore, and the Patriots always bring a lot of viewers. Of course, the Dallas Cowboys aren't there, but you think about the franchises and the fan bases that you're now going to work into the equation. Baltimore and the D.C. area. San Francisco, the Bay Area. Green Bay, I know it's not a major metro, but take it from me, whose dad whole side of the family is from Wisconsin. If you're from Wisconsin, you're generally a Packers fan. There may be a few that root for the Vikings or other teams in the area, the Bears, but for the most part, Wisconsin is Packers country. So now you're bringing in Kansas City in that area and some other major metros. But wild card weekend was a good start. Okay, so the Vikings-Saints game, 30.8 million viewers for Fox, Fox Deportes, and then the various streaming platforms. It actually was the most watched TV program on Fox of any kind, going back to what? Last year's playoffs, of course. And it was a 2% jump from Seahawks-Cowboys last year on Fox in the wild card round. By the way, for those of you who get all of your football and other media online, it was the most streamed NFL playoff game ever, which doesn't surprise me considering we're still pretty early on with the live streaming of games. Okay, so that's Vikings Saints, 30.8 million viewers. Seattle over Philadelphia. Here you go, peeps. Also in the NFC, TV's most watched show since Super Bowl 54. 53. It won't be as high as Super Bowl 54. The most watched show across any genre, not just sports, since Super Bowl 53. 35.8 million viewers. How about that? 5 million more viewers than what the Vikings and Saints got. Even though Seattle, Philadelphia, it was slow at times. It was a kind of an ugly game, which is how Seattle likes to play. But that includes both TV and digital. Most watched NFL wildcard game in 5 years. No, I'm sorry, 6 years. Going back to 2014. Saturday's Bills-Texans wildcard game, the most viewed ever on ESPN and ABC. And then I told you about Titans and Patriots and what a big bonanza that was for CBS. But big picture. Not just the fact that these are some of the most watched programs on TV going back to last year's Super Bowl, but up 7% from last winter and the most watched wild card round average since 2016. And that's just the beginning, you guys. Divisional round, championship Sunday, those are sure to be ratings bonanzas as well. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio. It could have been all four road teams winning. But the Buffalo Bills coughed up a 16-point second-half lead. Josh Allen delivering his final official comments of the season in his exit interview with the Bills on Monday.
We've got a good basis on where we're at right now, and a lot of guys coming back next year. So we're going to have this feeling in our stomachs for the next 8 months until we play again. And throughout the off-season process of training and working out and trying to learn our playbook and getting into some deeper things there and utilizing that, it's for sure going to help us out in the long run.
I agree with that. Just like now he wasn't part of the process and making the playoffs 2 years ago. He was drafted right after that. So this was his playoff debut. But every time you have an opportunity to experience the postseason, not only does it whet your appetite, but it just gives you a body of experience to draw from. I'm a big believer in the experience. You know I am. I say it all the time. There's no shortcut to experience. There's no button you can press, no essential oil you can use. There's no way that you can get there by buying it on Amazon. You just have to go through it. Zach Ertz, of course, has been through a lot, including that Super Bowl title a couple years ago. But the Eagles, and he speaks for the locker room, it sounds like, the Eagles are tired. They're worn out. This was a physically and mentally demanding year. And he admits that this is really tough.
Not great, obviously. Mentally not great. It's tough ending the season like the way we did. I feel better physically today than I did 2 weeks ago on the Monday after the game, so that's a plus. But obviously disappointed. I mean, this is my seventh year now, finishing my seventh year, and this is the seventh locker room clean out, and the only one that felt good was 2 years ago after we won the Super Bowl. Every other year sucked.
It's true. And on Monday, he wasn't mincing words. I have no doubt Zach speaks for most of the Eagles locker room. I always hear, though, from players, and I think this applies to fans, too. Even if it's an early exit, you'd rather be there than not be there. So for the Eagles, even though it was a painful exit and the loss of Carson Wentz in the first quarter kind of derailed everything they wanted to do and knocked them back, you'd rather be the Eagles than the Cowboys. You'd rather win the NFC East and get in than not get in at all. So the Cowboys instead have hired their new head coach in Mike McCarthy. A lot of you finding me on Twitter and Facebook to let me know what you think. Jimmy says on Twitter, A-Law Radio, I'm a big Green Bay Packer fan. I'm actually excited and very intrigued to see Mike coach Dallas. My son is a Dallas fan, so it's quite the dynamic already in our house. That's awesome. I like that a lot. A mixed household. Another tweet, though, from Jason. I'm sorry, but all that time with A-Rod and only one Super Bowl, not good enough. It's like Peyton and Breeze. All that time and just one Super Bowl. I always appreciate that hot take. Yes, because someone sitting in his couch at home, you know, it's super easy. You just plug in a really good quarterback and boom, you win multiple Super Bowls. I mean, come on. How hard can it be? It's After Hours, CBS Sports Radio.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.